This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You brought up like, hey, you got Steph and you got Jimmy Butler and you got Draymond Green. I'm coming away through four games in this series, and we got to win tonight to really put them away. I'm very iffy on tonight's game.
Really?
Yeah, I am.
Why? Real quick.
I just think that, you know, Houston's not going to lay down, and I think that they actually could play a better game all around. I don't know if Fred VanVleet will be as efficient, but I think he found something, and I think Şengün is clearly just a matchup nightmare, and I could see them getting us in foul trouble and continuing to dictate pace. I think you have to have a Steph game to be able to win this one on the road. I do.
I would love a night-night in Houston. I would love that. Yeah. Just on the organization, just on that team. And real quick, you know, you think they stick with that same starting lineup? I mean, why?
Quinn Post?
Well, no. Well, what they did last game.
Started Quinn Post last game.
Well, no. Buddy Hield, you mean?
Oh, excuse me,
yeah,
Buddy Hield.
Yeah.
They started Quinn Post.
Kuminga game. Is my box score wrong? Joe Shaz. Yeah. No, but Draymond, Butler, Curry, Pods. Hield, Pods. Do you think you do that again?
Yeah, I probably
stick with
would.
That. Okay.
I probably would. My biggest takeaway through four games is that, like, Brandon Pajemski's here. Not that he is a superstar or whatever, but in terms of like third scorer on this team, that's exactly who he is right now. He is your third most reliable scorer. And look, that might terrify some people, but the guy gets a lot of layups. He creates a ton of second chance opportunities. He's involved in a lot of action as a passer, as a screener, as a roller. His 3-point shot has looked more decisive. He's got better arc on it. I think his touch has improved as the season has went on. As an offensive solo artist, I don't view him the way I view Jordan Poole, but in the fabric of the Warrior offense, I actually think he fits a little better right now because he can do a little more in terms of overall floor game than what JP can. JP is an outstanding ISO scorer and can play off ball and can catch and shoot.
He gets to the rim. Like, he was different. Like, he can get his layups and get there.
Potts, in his own unorthodox way, gets to the rim pretty well.
I hear you, but also I think JP was just a better athlete overall than him, so he relied on that.
Maybe.
You don't think so?
I think we underrate Pajemski's athleticism.
Well, I mean, okay. I'm a white guy talking about the white athlete. I love the gym rats, the guys that work very hard.
Potts gets his shot off over a lot of people.
No, he does, but Jordan Poole, I feel like he's maybe just because of his body type, I felt like he was a little taller than Pajemski too.
I think Pajemski's 6'5". I think Jordan Poole's what, 6'3"? 6'2"?
6'4". So maybe it's just the body type I'm looking
at. 6'4"?
He's just what he's listed at, 6'4". Yeah. But again, like, I think he had better hops is what I'm saying with athleticism. I think that's inarguable, Jordan Poole.
But in this system, I think athleticism is not a requirement. I think discernment and, you know, making the right play, making the extra pass, kicking it around, continuing to move. Like, I think the skill set for Pajemski obviously fits a lot better with this team and what they want to do.
Sure. No, I understand, but let's also not get it twisted. Jordan Poole did win a title and was a key cog in that. Let's wait for Pods to do that as well with the Golden State Warriors before we start saying this is a better fit. So I hear you, but I think we're a little jaded on how things ended with Jordan Poole, and I still got a tremendous amount of respect for what he did here in Golden State. I'm not saying you aren't, but I'm just saying
I think he's replicating comparable production.
Okay,
that's what I'm saying, but not maybe in the I only score way, but in terms of setting up others and leading to victories. And also, he's closed way more games than JP down the stretch in these playoff games.
John's in San Rafael wants to join in the conversation. 888-957-9570 is the number. Call or text the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. By the way, Anthony Slater joining us, 8:30, tapped in on all things Golden State Warriors for The Athletic, and obviously right here on 95.7 The Game. And you're going to want to be listening real quick between now and 8:30, Shasky and I, The Morning Roast, 95.7 The Game, and courtesy of Oracle, I should put that in there, courtesy of Oracle, we are giving you a 4-pack of tickets to Saturday's game between the San Francisco Giants and Colorado Rockies. Going to be Star Wars weekend, and the first 15,000 guests at Saturday's game will receive a Star Wars bucket hat. You're going to want to be listening between now and 8:30. You're going to be hearing a sounder. Not yet, but you're going to be hearing it. And when I play it, you're going to be caller number 5 to the contest line, and I'll give out that number at that time. But in the meantime, let's go to John in San Rafael. John, what's up, John? Good morning. What you got, ma'am?
Good morning, guys. I'm a first-time caller. First, I want to say I really appreciate the way that you get into the weeds a little bit and break things down. A moment ago, you were talking about the game where Draymond essentially didn't play in the second half. And then you talked about all the different sets of circumstances where somehow the Warriors find a way to win and that it's been going on for a decade. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter is what you were really talking about is the genius of Steve Kerr, the underrated genius of Steve Kerr. As a former player and as a coach, he seems to have this intrinsic sense of when things are starting to turn or what needs to be done. And nobody's perfect. I'm not saying he is. But the man makes adjustments on the fly, and he continues to make adjustments. He made like 5 adjustments in the fourth quarter with his lineups for moments, for literally a minute and a half or 2 minutes, in order to get the team in a position to get over the top. And granted, the players still have to execute. But it doesn't happen if you've got a coach that, let's say, not playing your 2 stars in the fourth quarter like the Knicks. The guy's amazing, and I don't think he gets for all the credit he does get, I don't think he gets enough credit. That's my take.
No, it's a great point.
Great point, John.
I agree with you. And his ability to adapt based on the personnel he has available, I think, is important as well. Every run, they've found niche players to have games here and there. Whether we're talking Otto Porter Jr., whether we're talking Mo Spates, Leandro Barbosa back in the day. He always seems to, Steve Kerr that is, find the right guy at the right time to step up. Now you can say, oh, it's culture. Oh, there's so many great players. You forget about this guy or that guy or whatever. I also think coaching has to do a lot with that. Like if you're plugging and playing all these different guys and you just find a way to have a guy have a matchup and have a particular night in a series, like that is how you not only steal a game, but you win these difficult games.
Well, I think it's a great point. And what did we say when that whole trade, it was our first week together, actually, that whole trade went down at the trade deadline, acquiring Jimmy Butler, saying goodbye to Andrew Wiggins. We're saying, okay, the pressure's on Steve Kerr now to have this Rubik's Cube puzzle and finding how Jimmy Butler fits into this equation going forward with him, with Steph, with Draymond. Who's going to close? Who needs the ball in their hand? What's happening? Well, it's worked. Mm-hmm. Like, give the guy some credit. It has worked. Is he going to get the right combination every single time? No. You don't do everything right all the time. Phil Jackson didn't do things right all the time. Greg Popovich had mistakes. The greatest, like the Red Auerbach, all the greats, the Bill Belichick, go down the list, Bill Walsh. Everyone's had mistakes as great head coaches. You are not going to be right 100% of the time, okay? Having said that, I love my chances if he is my head coach going forward because I know his record and his track record speaks for itself as a player and a coach. Again, I'm going to say it. I'll say it every day if I have to. I don't care. He has lost 1 Western Conference series in his career. In his career! He's lost 1 time in the Western Conference playoffs, people. 1 time. Yeah, I'm taking him over J.J. Redick. Yeah, I'm taking him over Adelman, whoever his first name is, who took over for Michael Malone. Yeah, I'm taking him over Ty Lue. And I like Ty Lue, but I'm taking Steve Kerr over him. Dagnall, whatever you want to pronounce it. I'm taking him over OKC and Tibbs and everyone else, Missoula. I am taking my guy Steve Kerr, and I am trusting that he will get the right combination in the right moment, in the right game. And if he doesn't, he'll learn from his mistakes. That is something I do appreciate from Steve Kerr. He'll own it. If he makes a mistake, he'll say, you know what? And again, that Kyrie Irving game with the Dallas Mavericks when they didn't double him, that was one of like the bad losses that they had in that scenario. He even said, he's like, yeah, I probably should have doubled him earlier. I probably made a mistake there. It's refreshing because a lot of coaches just, I'm seeing it right now in J.J. Redick saying, I don't think it was fatigue that lost us that game. It was our star players not making layups. So I was like, okay, well, J.J., he could have just said, you know what? Maybe I should have gotten some guys rest. Steve Kerr, I think, would have said that. Like, That's a green head coach right there showing his age and years when in his basketball puberty as a head coach, if you will, to go guru on you. And that's why Steve Kerr and against Ime Udoka, who has coached to a finals. So I'm taking Steve Kerr in this scenario. And also helps that you have Steph Curry, too. And he'll tell you that.
You think? You think? You know,
that was a lot there. Sorry. But
no,
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that we forget is, like, over time, we forget some of the people they've taken down.
And Hall of Famers, man.
Well, like, I think this happens also with Jordan, right? So, like, you guys were talking about, like, who did Jordan deny? It's like, and the first name that I came to my mouth that none of you guys even ever, no one ever represented, they did beat the Lakers in their first ever title.
They did
beat a team that was literally in 9 finals, okay? And had all the experience, even if they were older.
Yeah.
And Magic had an opportunity to get his 6th final.
Yep.
Right? That's who who Michael beat in his first title. The Warriors' first title, they beat LeBron. Yep. Coming off of Heedle's LeBron.
Yep.
Probably the apex of his physical capabilities. Would you agree?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Like, let's also, J.R. Smith was 29. Okay. Now, Tristan Thompson and Dellavedova were younger. But you had James Jones and Mike Miller on that team, even though they didn't play a whole lot. Timothy Mozgov was 28 years old.
Yep.
The Warriors had none of the experience back then. And the Lakers, the Cavaliers had the majority of the experience.
Yep.
In particular, LeBron James. Now, obviously, injuries were a big part of that series. You know, you had the injury with Kevin Love. You had the injury with Kyrie Irving. I'm not going to pretend like those didn't factor in. Of course they did. But you still beat LeBron.
You know, it's funny you bring up that.
And you had no experience.
You bring up that Chicago Bulls team in 1991 that beat the Los Angeles Lakers. You know who the coach was for the Lakers? Mike Dunleavy, senior. It's funny. No, I'm just, it's funny how things, you know, Chicago Bulls.
Read off that Laker, that original Laker roster.
Okay, so they had Vlade Divac, mm-hmm. who was
really good.
He's a Hall of Famer.
I think he was drafted in 88 or 89.
Yeah, he was sick. Like, yeah. People think of him awesome. As the Kings, but yeah. He was amazing.
No, he was awesome.
Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Eldon Campbell.
Yeah. James Worthy.
James, a Hall of Famer.
Come on. Who else we got? A.C. Green.
Yeah, who was awesome.
Byron Scott was hurt and injured in that. Like, that was a big one that they were missing.
Yeah.
Who else we got? Michael Thompson, Clay's dad, was on that team still. I mentioned Sam Perkins, Larry Drew, and like you said, Tony Smith, Terry Teagle, Irving Thomas. So, but James Worthy and Byron Scott, those were kind of guys that were injured in that series too. So, but again, aging, but that's you have Magic Johnson. Like, that's like, come on. Like,
and you beat the Showtime Lakers.
Yes.
And basically ended their little run.
And in the Eastern Conference Finals, who'd they beat and got revenge on? The Detroit Pistons.
Exactly.
And it was obviously the famous where they didn't shake hands.
Yes.
And, you know, so the rest is history there. And,
but when we talk about Kerr, I don't think that first title, I just don't think people give it enough appreciation.
No.
They were the clear underdogs. No one in the world thought they were going to win. And I know time has changed it. It's like, oh, well, of course the Warriors were going to beat the Cavaliers. Go back and remember it. Like, after you won the championship, you sat there, you're like, we just beat LeBron James in the championship.
Yep.
Heedle's LeBron.
Yeah, I know. It's insane. It's insane. No. And I look at that team in that series, and because the injury, Kyrie Irving, can you do it again? And then they did do it again and had the greatest regular season in history of sport, then came back from down 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who had been to an NBA Finals a couple years prior, against that Miami Heat team, and to do it in that building, Game 6, Clay, the rest was history. Like, they were able to do that and then build a 3-1 series, later. I think everyone's asleep on the comeback or thinks of the comeback. No, they had a 3-1 series.
They should have.
They were, again, we're talking about who was the better. They were the better team in that series. They were the better team in that series.
It was a lot. It was back and forth. Like, the blowouts.
Bogut got hurt. Like, if we want to do the same thing with, oh, well, we're blaming that. Well, you know, Kyrie Irving was hurt. Well, Bogut got hurt. Like, that was a big. Like, yeah, that was big.
Yeah, but they also were tied with 2 minutes to go.
Okay.
You know, oh, well, you didn't execute.
Yeah, that's fine. But I still think the Warriors are a better team that series. That's fine. If you don't think that,
I do. If I say it to my in my head, it's like, well, then I'm trying to like discredit the accomplishments of Kyrie and LeBron. It's a loss that'll never sit well.
Every single great comeback has an equal choke job built into it. As far as I'm concerned, there's always like the 28-3 blown lead in the Super Bowl. Yeah, it was an incredible comeback. That was also an incredible gag job. Like, that was, oh my God. Like, I feel sorry for Atlanta Falcons. Like, they can't even look at the number 28 and not think of that score or the number 3. You can't even look at those numbers.
I just think when you're facing certain people, I hate hearing the word choke. Like, it's just.
I know you don't. You and Steiny hate that word.
I don't because I think it diminishes, you know, the whole competitive aspect of playing sports. Things happen. Stuff happens. It's never over. It's just the way I view it. Like, it's never over. Anyone could beat anyone on any given day, given the circumstances.
That's fine. But when you have a 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl, or you have a 3-1 series lead, like, I would say if I'm a Warriors fan, I was like, we probably gagged that away more than they had the incredible comeback.
No, there are things I would like back.
Correct.
Right? But that also doesn't, like, okay, gagging it away. I mean, Steph couldn't, he couldn't move, and he couldn't, you know, shake Kevin Love on the perimeter. He threw a ball away. You know, Iggy gets blocked by LeBron James. Like, a lot of this also has to do with what Cleveland did well.
Sure, no, and look, talking about gagging it away, I'm sure that's how Rockets fans feel, right? Back in, you know, game 7 when they missed 27 straight three-pointers. It's like, we could have get one? Just one of them? By the way, the Rockets announcer, Craig Ackerman, we're talking about like PTSD from fan bases that players have given. We're talking about Michael Jordan doing that for a lot of fan bases, Stephen Curry. Here's the Rockets announcer, Craig Ackerman, talking about the PTSD he has from Stephen Curry.
Curry got to pick him up, shake loose. Oh my goodness. Beats the shot clock. Steph Curry with 28, his fourth three.
I'm just telling you, man, I got PTSD from seeing this dude too many times in the playoffs. I just got to admit it.
Comes into Curry on the bounce, launches deep one. Oh, my goodness. And he hits it.
It's just
it's exactly like me and Mahomes.
Real quick, exactly.
Exactly like me and Mahomes.
You know what I appreciate about opposing announcers that are supposed to have a tinge of bias to them? A tinge. Like, there's, like Fitz, obviously, Tim Roy. They're calling it through a Warriors lens, if you will.
They're team employees. That's the way I view it.
But I love when announcers feel the moment of opposing players when they're on fire.
Yes.
And they know the moment. That's what I appreciate about great announcers. Fitz, if he sees, you know, even LeBron having an incredible guy, he'll feel the moment. Tim Roy, same thing. I know you don't want to do that, but it's the same scenario where the Rockets are like, oh my God, Stephen Curry, this guy's incredible. How can you not just appreciate greatness? And that's what I love about great broadcasters. And we're going to be talking to one at 9:20 with Dave Fleming, because I'm sure he feels moments too, whether it's a Shohei Ohtani, it's like, oh my God. Like, yeah, it's the Dodgers. I can't stand that, but they're incredible. And he's incredible. And like, you have to feel the moment. And I appreciate that. You can go one of two ways, Joe. Either you do that or you just have disgust. Right? It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? Like, just silence. It's like, you can't say anything.
That was me with the early 90s Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, just.
Well, they were so good. I hated them, but I also recognized, like, oh, Emmitt's one of the best running backs of all time.
Right.
Michael Irvin's one of the most difficult covers in the league. And Troy Aikman, as much as I hate his guts, just didn't make mistakes.
Well, I think I think Bonte's talked about this too. Like, the appreciation for for Troy Aikman has come for Niners fans, like, in the booth more. Like,
he's been way more.
He's great, and he have the famous.
Way more.
I'm afraid Jimmy Garoppolo's going to have to get it done. Drop. Where is that, by the way? I have that somewhere.
Well, the same thing could be said for, you know, I think a lot of people when it comes to, once a guy retires, you can, like, kind of let your guard down a little and recognize how great they are. Like, one day Kershaw's going to hang it up, and I'll be able to be like, yeah, Kershaw's pretty badass.
Yeah, he's incredible. It's just, he's not an incredible postseason pitcher. It doesn't take away what he did in the regular season, but I think a lot of people are going to be looking at that. And Giants fans, I think it's easy for them to reflect on Clayton Kershaw too, because they won so many World Series titles, and their guys balled out in the playoffs, and they could laugh at him while he had his playoff miseries and shortcomings. But I do think he's a good guy at the end of the day. And I choose to think about, you know what? I always look back to that Sports Illustrated cover, him and Lincecum. How could you not, right? It's one of the great covers of all time. The Freak, Hall of Famer, Clayton
Would
Kershaw.
Would Lincecum trade his career for Kershaw's?
It's a great question. No, he's not, first and foremost. He won't, but it's a great question. And I respect, because you're basically training up. And Clayton Kershaw's won. He's won World Series rings. One ring, really. And you can call it half a ring if you want to call it.
It was a 60-game season.
I know.
But it was
a championship. It was a championship, and he wasn't really a contributor on last season's championship for the Dodgers because he had injuries. But he'll get a ring nonetheless. But it's a good question, right? You want to be a Hall of Famer, you want to win a title. Like, I always go back to but even then, Tim Lincecum, I know he's not a Hall of Famer, but if it was the basketball Hall of Fame rules, he would be a Hall of Famer.
Lincecum?
Yes. Like,
he might get a statue with the Giants, and he's not a Hall of Famer.
God, so
not even close.
He's so good. I know, but his baseball's so strict. There's such a tough criteria, but he was so damn good.
He's closer to Sandy Koufax in terms of short-term excellence, like Gale Sayers-like.
Well, yeah, I always liken a local guy that pitched for both the years, Vida Blue.
Yeah,
well, incredible.
Vida. Like, last base hit by a pitcher in the American League.
I mean, he was incredible. He won three World Series. Yeah. Won three straight. 72-74, six-time All-Star, MVP. I mean, like,
if you play the video game.
200 wins?
If you play the video game and you never saw him pitch on YouTube or whatever, if you play the video game, MLB The Show, and you get to use Vida Blue, he's got one of the coolest pitching deliveries of all time.
I don't know, man. I think he actually kind of should be in the Hall. Like, I'm just looking at his resume right now. I get it. He had a career 3.27 ERA,
which is
2,100 strikeouts, 209 wins,
which is just nowhere near for that era.
I know. Six-time All-Star, three-time World Series champion, as I mentioned, three in a row, one of the greatest dynasties in the history of the sport that no one talks about, AL MVP, a Cy Young, and he's a Hall of Famer for both the A's and Giants. He pitched a no-hitter. Like, RIP Vida Blue, man. Like, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. I do. I feel some type of way about it. I'm feeling some type of way also about Steve Kerr, as our guy John and Sam Rafael talked about, not getting his credit. We're talking about great head coaches, too. And I think Steve Kerr's done a masterclass, and Game 4 is a masterclass for him. And Jay Billis joined us Monday talking about why maybe he doesn't get the credit that he rightly deserves.
Steve's a really smart basketball person. He's been around the game forever. You guys know how it is. It's kind of like, he has a connection playing for Phil Jackson. But when Phil Jackson was coaching the Bulls and the Lakers, you know, he probably didn't get as much credit because, well, of course, he's got Jordan and Pippen, or he's got Shaq and Kobe. You know, I don't remember people saying that about Red Auerbach having the lineups he did with Bill Russell and the Lion, you know, John Havlicek and all that. No coach is going to win without great players. There are some coaches that lose with them, but there aren't very many that have ever won. I think it would be zero that have won big without great players. And sometimes, you know, the coaching gets overlooked in that.
No, it's a great point. And, you know, I think coaches like Eric Spoelstra, I think, earns a lot of, you know, rep around the league or street cred, if you will, for lack of a better term. Like when he was able to get to those finals with Jimmy Butler as the best player, and not a whole hell of a lot outside of like Bam Adebayo and a young Tyler Hero, right? The Max Strus's of the world, all that. Like, I think people look at those like, wow, Eric Spoelstra, he is the best coach in the NBA because look what he did there. Look what he did with Jimmy Butler. That's incredible. I was like, okay, but we can also give credit like when the team that's supposed to win it all actually wins it all. Like, there is something to be said about that, because how many times do we say that about certain teams that should win it all that don't?
There's a guy right now in the NBA who I feel like is dramatically underrated, and it's Joe Mazzulla. I love him. And if you watch the Celtics a little bit, I'm not pretending to be some, you know, league pass guy, but I've watched a lot of Celtics over the last 2 months. I like the way he coaches. I think he pulls all the right levers. When it comes to his team, he knows his team's strengths and weaknesses inside and out. He plays various lineups, and I feel like he has a really good feel for the timing and the feel and the pace of a game.
He's also a little quirky, Joe Mazzulla. He's a little off when he's talking to the media.
I like him. I think he's like really relatable.
Well, he's like on edge, like not on edge, but he's like always like very serious, like deadpan delivery with a lot of stuff. Like, he has some jokes.
He's no nonsense. Yes.
But that team is a little bit no nonsense too, right?
And I respect he is doesn't shy away from his faith. Not that he tries to throw it down people's throats or whatever, but I think that like, if you understand who he is and you do a little backstory, you'd appreciate him.
Well, he had something where it was like I think, who was it? Prince William and Kate Middleton or whatever. They were at like courtside at one of the games, and it's just like, oh, did you see the future king and queen or something? He's like, the only king and queen I acknowledge is Joseph and Mary. I was like, oh my God. I was like, this guy, are you serious? I was like, okay, Joe, relax a little bit. You're really playing into that Boston Catholicism really well, aren't you? Laying it on thick with all those guys. But he knows his market, right? So there you go. A lot of the Irish Catholics there. Do we know who the Pope is yet? No? We're still waiting? Yeah? Is Shams going to have the breaking news, by the way, when that happens?
Did you see his opening pitch at the Cubs game?
Shams?
Yeah.
He did that? Is he like a Chicago guy?
I didn't know he was, but he was wearing a Chicago Cubs jersey, and first pitch, excuse me, and yeah, he did it. It was okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
it was. Born in Chicago.
What's that?
He was born in Chicago.
Okay. I didn't even know that.
Well, there you go. All right. So you
for some reason,